Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director at the Anthony Michael Group, building companies and careers across the industry. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Mr. Noor Manji, who is the director of talent acquisition at Hearing Life, which is a national hearing care company, part of the DeMont umbrella of companies. And Noor comes to us with over 20 years of experience in recruiting, staffing, talent acquisition. He's worked on the third-party side. He's worked for major companies like Getinge, and now, of course, leads talent acquisition here for Hearing Life. So without further ado, Noor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mitch, thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate this.
Well, I'm excited because I was chatting with you offline. I said, man, you're one of the realest guys that I've met in a long time, both, you know, just as far as your own character, but how you look at talent acquisition and the whole ecosystem from the candidate side to the talent partner side to the hiring manager perspective. And so today, I'm excited to dig in with you and really kind of have as real of a conversation as we can. You know, this market is crazy. I've been a headhunter going on 16 years. This is probably the toughest market I've seen, even including a 2009. And so I want to, there's so many things I want to dig into with you. But before we do any of that, I got to ask you, man, I mentioned in the beginning, over 20 years in the business, how'd you get involved in talent acquisition and recruiting to begin with?
Totally by accident. I was in the market, you know, looking for a job in 2003. I couldn't find a job. A friend of mine said, you know what, you're very good in sales. You should get into recruiting. I'm like, how does recruiting fall into line of sales? And he was like, that's the biggest sales job ever. So when then somebody gave me a chance. Okay. They interviewed me and they said, okay, can you sell? I said, oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, but sell what? Is it something good? I said, well, you're going to sell opportunities to people. I just fell in love with the concept, and some agency hired me, and I never looked back. The more I work in this field, the more I fall in love with it, because you really get to make an impact in people's lives. I've always said this, that people take longer to decide if they're going to change their job or are they going to say, yes, I'm going to get married, you know, I'm going to get engaged, or I'm going to get married. I think they do more of a due diligence when it comes to changing their jobs. And I think you can make a big impact in this field.
Absolutely. And what was the transition for you? I guess maybe the catalyst of working on the third party side in an agency like myself versus working in corporate talent acquisition?
Both are different. Both are totally different. I enjoyed both. The agency aspect is you can walk away from clients that are not responsive or people who are not really responding to you. On the corporate side, you really cannot walk away from people who are not responsive. You have to find a way to make it work. I just felt that at that point that I really wanted to work with a bigger team working out of a bigger platform, but both lives are totally different. I know some folks who are agency recruiters, they will never work corporate. I've worked with some of the most amazing folks, and they have told me very clearly, you cannot pay me enough to work for a corporation. And on the flip side, I've got some corporate guys who are fantastic. They say, I will never go back to an agency. So I guess it's a mindset. You need for different things at different stages in your life. At least that's the way I see it.
What was the change? How did the change come about for you as far as how you made the flip to corporate?
Because now when I ran my own agency, my wife and I, we did it together for 8 years. So when people say you didn't have a boss for 8 years, I worked with my wife. When you work with your wife, you pretty much know who the boss is. I had no illusions about that. I thought I was in charge, but clearly sometimes 80% of the times, I knew who was in charge. So
she made you feel like perhaps you were making the decisions, but you really weren't.
She made me feel like I was a lot of times, you know. That was a bit tricky. But I just thought I wanted to work with a bigger team. That's all. So agency life was great. I mean, it for about 8.5 years or so, you know, nonstop.
Nice.
It was great. But then last year or so, we're like, you know what? Let's work with more people. And we all tried the corporate route, and we both loved it. So. But and I just fell in love with it. I think it all boils down to the people that you work with at both ends. If you 100%. Like the team that you work with, then you'll have fun. On Sunday night, you're going to be like, you know, you're going to be excited as opposed to, oh, I got to go to work tomorrow. You know, you're going to be happy, you know.
Right on, man. Well, let's come back to what I said. You know, it's a tough market for a lot of folks out there. Tons of layoffs, tons of competition. Talent acquisition teams are overloaded with the amount of applications coming in from all walks of life. I want to talk to you about a few things. One, are you seeing this in your own organization right now?
And some jobs, yes. But that is a long answer. So, but ask the question and I'll answer it because I sense a part two, you know, coming up.
Yeah, well, so I want to talk about this twofold. The candidate experience, right? And I want to make sure that we don't make it a buzz phrase because so many talk about making a great candidate experience, but then their actions lend itself to the exact opposite of what they say. For candidates who are sitting there frustrated and they're banging their heads against the wall and they're applying online because that's all they know right now, right? We haven't taught them any other tricks. So let's just say that they follow what everybody has told them to do. Use your network to the best of your ability, apply to as many jobs and hope that people get back to you. And that they're not hearing back. What do you have to say to these folks?
See, unfortunately, I'm going to answer that question in a slightly different way, right? Every industry is different, right? If you're going to take med tech, life science, pharma, you know, that industry, right? It's a little different. If you're applying for jobs, are you applying for jobs that you're really qualified for? Are those? And here's another question. Are those jobs real? I've had so many calls from my past colleagues saying that they applied for certain jobs, but they never heard back. It turns out that those jobs were not real. A lot of times, they were not real. Unfortunately, that happens everywhere. I see a lot of jobs posted that they don't want to hire for, but they just want to gather resumes. But that happens. But on the flip side, the market is a little tight right now. And when you see numbers, right, if you see a job posted, you're going to see 100 applicants. Folks, that is not true. That is not correct. I see that for our jobs, 100, like, you know, folks apply. That's not true. You go in there and there's like maybe one or two applicants. Those numbers are, I don't know how the social media, the job boards get those numbers. I think when somebody clicks on that, it shows that this person applied. Those are just clicks. It doesn't mean anything. So that's another way. Are like, you know, people applying for jobs that are real? I mean, that they're qualified for. If they are qualified for a job and they don't hear back, that's unfortunate. But your best bet is to find out who could be the hiring manager for those jobs. Or find out who the recruiter is at that company and send them an email. I'll tell you one thing. A lot of times TF folks will not respond, but a lot of times they will. And those are the ones that you want to reach out to. You don't know who's going to respond. Again, I'm not saying play the numbers game, but if you reach out to 20 recruiters, it's almost a guarantee that 5 are going to respond to you. Okay? You build relationships with those, find out what's going on in the company. I'm telling you, I have hired so many people that just, you know, messaged me on LinkedIn because they were like 100 applicants. Those were the jobs that you would get 100 applicants for. But they message you on LinkedIn or they find your email from somewhere. Hey, I'm interested in this job. And then you start talking to that person. I mean, in my own team, I've hired people not only over here, but for the last 10 years. I think everybody I've hired came through referrals. I'm going to be honest with you. They came through referrals. And when I talk to senior leadership, especially in the medtech, they hire through referrals a lot of times, especially if you're looking at senior directors and above. They will hire through referrals, like maybe 80% of the times. I'm not throwing these numbers out, but I've seen that in the last 10 years. They come through referrals.
I just had a colleague in the industry. Well, first of all, let me validate what you said. Absolutely. I think sometimes people are unnerved by the idea of reaching out directly because they think they're going to get the hand slapped or they think they're doing something that they're not supposed to. And what I would say is now, of all times, it's all about attention. Who can command attention? Adding value and commanding attention. Sending a resume and filling out an application is not commanding attention. Reaching out directly, explaining the skill set and the value that you present as a solution provider versus just another resume to somebody's pain points is commanding attention. And so I absolutely agree with you as far as being proactive. And the other thing I would add on to that is if you didn't hear back the first time, it doesn't mean that they're not interested. It means that people are busy and you have to be diligent and have some sort of follow-up process in place. I talked to a colleague in the industry the other day. She's a talent acquisition leader as well. She was hiring for a recruiter on her team. Mm-hmm. Within 24 hours, 750 applications, real resumes. Guess who she hired?
The one she got as a referral.
Exactly. None of them. She hired a referral.
I did the exact same thing last year. I had about over 200 or 300 applicants. Got a referral from somebody who sits next to me, and she turned out to be fantastic.
So the message to the audience is, if you're in job seeking mode actively, you've got to leverage your network in a way that cuts through. And the best way is to start reaching out based on your expertise and start adding value. Figure out where you can, because the law of reciprocity kicks in and people want to help you naturally.
Absolutely.
Noor, what about the candidate experience internally though? People are getting bombarded with applications, maybe not as much as LinkedIn says, but it's one thing to have to comb through resumes as a TA team of recruiters, right? Mm-hmm. It's another thing to then have qualified candidates and get them through a successful process before you lose to a competitor. I want to hear your take on the candidate experience internally and what you guys are doing.
So basically, a good recruiter will always be in touch with the candidate no matter what, whether they are moving forward or not. If it's not this job and it's the next job, stay close to the silver medalists, people who did not get the job, but those who are good, because if they are good, you will hire them, if not today, after 6 months, after 1 year, after 2 years. But the candidate experience, in my opinion, is absolutely critical, because if they don't have a good time, if they don't have a good experience, they're going to go on job boards and write stuff which is not very positive. Okay. At the same time, if they have a good experience, but they still did not get a job with your company right now, they will leave with a good impression. Okay. So the good recruiter will always keep in touch with these candidates and let them know what's going on, what the status is. I know some fantastic recruiters who will not only stay in touch, but to get that person on board, they will offer to help the family members out also, because inevitably somebody will say, you know what, I love everything that you've said, but I need help for my son or my daughter or my husband. You know what? Offer to help. Because ultimately, if you help one person that you don't know, you don't know what that person will go say to somebody else. It'll all come back to you. It's karma. I've asked everybody to read two books if you want to change your mindset. You have to walk in with a positive, not aggressive, but a very positive mindset. Like, there's a book called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. Somebody gave me this book back in 2003. Your self-talk will bring you down or it'll bring you up. So that's one of the books. And then the other book, which every recruiter, in my opinion, should read, is The Talent War. It shows you how to recruit like a SEAL. It's actually written by a SEAL. So, I mean, I read that book and I couldn't stop reading. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. You know, it'll make you get up like, oh, wow, I want to do this, you know? It'll get you fired up, but it'll change your thinking. I think that's what books are supposed to do, change the way you operate.
So that's awesome.
These two books will elevate everything that you do. At least that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, both of them I haven't heard about, so I appreciate the referrals, as does, I'm sure, our listeners. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of things. You said, do you want, even if we don't hire this person, mm-hmm. the idea of taking care of them through the process so that they have a good experience? Mm-hmm. Because guess what? You're going to get people talking in the marketplace no matter what.
Absolutely.
It's a matter of how do you want them to be speaking about you?
Absolutely.
And you hit on such a huge part to that. So, come back, though, to the candidate experience. You've got qualified people in the mix. Now you've got...
I lost you back there, Mitch. Mitch, I can't hear you.
Noor, can you hear me?
Yes.
I apologize. I had something go on with my technology here. But what I was saying is, we've all had hiring managers who say, I've got this critical position. I need help. We need candidates. You get them the candidates, and then lo and behold, I've got a vacation coming up, or I've got meetings, let's do it in 2 weeks from now, and don't realize the urgency. And then you've got your recruiters banging their heads thinking, we're going to lose these people. And then the candidate's upset because it's like, what the heck? You told me this was urgent. I haven't heard back in a week. I'm speaking truth, am I not?
You're calling that the daily breakfast, man. That's one thing that all recruiters deal with on a daily basis. And the only cure is, how good is the relationship with the hiring manager? How good is the recruiter's relationship with the hiring manager? You can have the best... Now, this situation can happen, that the manager really doesn't have time for the next 1 week. But come on, man, give me half an hour. Give me a lunch break. Give me half an hour. 12 o'clock. Give me 5 o'clock. Give me 6 o'clock. Give me half an hour. Now, if the recruiter has a good relationship with the hiring manager, 9 out of 10 times, they're going to get the time. But sometimes you have a new recruiter, the hiring manager is new, and they're like, no, this is how I work. Then the best thing to do is to have those conversations from before, that if I find somebody who's a really good fit, can I put them on your calendar at 5 o'clock? Give me 2 times that's going to work for you, 5 o'clock or 5:30 p.m., 12 o'clock, 7 a.m., anything that's going to work with you for the right candidate. Because if you are hunting for a very niche skill, in fact, people say, well, it's not a needle in the haystack. But unfortunately, I think a lot of positions are needles in the haystack now. You know, they call them the, I don't know, they used to call them a purple squirrel or a blue unicorn, pink fly. I don't know what it is anymore. It, you know,
all of the above.
All of the above, right? So, yeah. So again, it all would depends on the situation, but a lot of times the managers will not have the time, but it's our job as recruiters to say, hey, look, this is critical. This person is in play at so-and-so company. If we don't hire them now, if you don't move forward right now, you risk losing them to your competitor. And then you're getting back to square one. Now, if the manager doesn't respond favorably, means they are not serious, but then that's going to happen, Mitch. I wish I could tell you that that's not going to happen. There's a way to sort this out. I think more conversations with them is going to help. That's all you can do at this point.
So a lot to unpack there, because you mentioned, hey, look, it comes back to the relationship. In my opinion, both the agency side and the internal talent acquisition side is the conduit, basically, to get the deal done. And if we're not educating both sides and keeping both engaged and aware of what the other person is up to, as far as, you know, the competitive landscape on the candidate side, educating the hiring manager as to why it's important to not just interview, but to also sell the idea of being here, because candidates have options. The idea of timeline, so that we don't lose, you know, all of that falls on our shoulders. But I also think that there's a lot of talent acquisition folks who don't necessarily want to rock the boat, and they see themselves as the recruiter internally, but they're working with the VP of finance or the COO, or they're like, you know, is it my place? And I say, absolutely, because what is your job? Your job is to look out for the best interests of your organization by way of bringing in human capital that drives outcomes for the company. So absolutely. However, I'm sure, Nora, you've run into this. So how do you coach your team? How do you go about helping your team build these relationships?
My mindset is, right, if I have a recruiter on my team who's managing a job, it's their job to manage. I tell them, it's your job. You've got 10 hiring managers, but they are your jobs to fill. You have to treat them like your jobs. Hiring manager is just a person you're going to use to fill those jobs, but they are really your job. So you have to fill them. And most of the times, if your team is good, if you have good recruiters, you don't have to have this conversation a lot, because they know what they have to do, because they are responsible for filling their jobs. Ultimately, it's their responsibility. If the managers are not responding, then you have to bring it up. And this is not something you have to wait for a week or 2 weeks. If they are not responding, you have to let their leaders know. You have to let your boss know. You have to let people know that, hey, guys, there is some urgency at this one. But it's the recruiters. They have to drive. They are the drivers. I worked for this company a long time ago. That's why I got into this agency business. And they said that this business is a recruiter, like, you know, driven industry. It's a recruiter, like, you know, driven job. You have to be the driver, okay? If somebody is not responding, what do? You IM them, you text them, you email them, and you call them. That's the first thing. Email last. You call them up. These days, everybody's like, email. Email comes later. First is the phone. If you don't have them on your cell phone, you text them, you call them. That's the way. It's a phone business. End of the day, with all the AI merch, everything that's coming up front, there is no substitute for the old-fashioned phone. And that, I am very, very bullish on that. I don't think that's going to change.
100%. Have you run across what I'm explaining, though, where you've got recruiters who are intimidated to push an executive?
They are, but you have to coach them, right? And then you have to see, again, you have to empower them. Are they being pushed? Because if a leader complains, then they will be scared, right? Oh my God, somebody complained about it. So you have to empower your team that it's okay. Nobody's going to scold you. You can make mistakes. Call them, you know, message them. If they, and again, I ask people, how would you prefer that I reach out to you? Do you like Teams? Do you like emails? Or you like text? I've worked with leaders who absolutely hate any messages on Teams, but they love getting text messages. Mitch, I don't like text messages. I hate them because my kids, but when I call them, they never answer. They will respond with a text. What do you want, Dad? I'm like, guys, answer the phone. But this generation does not answer the phone. They work with text. So whatever is the mode of the leader, that's what you do. Some people say, do not IM me, send me a text. Some will say, don't text me. So we actually have a column, the preferred mode of contact. Is it email? Is it text? So we write that and we follow that. Okay, this leader likes emails. So email this one. This email, this person likes text. My team knows, everybody, all my friends know that I like phone. Just call me. If you text me, I'm going to get don't text me. Just call me. But everybody is different. But you meet people the way they want. That's what the recruiter's job is. You meet people where they are, the way they want.
I love that. And I love that because you're empowering the person who you need a response from to do it their way.
Absolutely.
I would tag on to that by also saying, set a commitment and an expectation up front. Hey, if I haven't heard from you, let's say within 48 hours, what should I do next? And if I do, you know what I'm saying? And almost give them some accountability. Be like, look, this is the commitment that we set up front.
So I learned that from you today. I'm going to add that to my talk next time because I have that 48-hour window. You have to respond in 48 hours. But I've never asked, what do I do if I don't get a response from you in 48 hours? That's a great point. I'm going to add that to my notes.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. We're helping each other today. That's great. And our audience. I'm all over the place, but you made such a great comment that I need to come back to. And that is, look, all the AI going on, it's not going to replace the human-to-human interaction. You know, we've been in this business together a long time. It was the monster in the Indeeds of the world. We're going to get rid of recruiters. It was the LinkedIns of the world. It was all these new tools. Now it's ChatGPT can do blah, 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 blah. Come on, man. Like, you can't tap somebody on the shoulder with AI and learn all about their motivations and what makes them tick and why they would, you know, what they want to do with their career. What do you say to what's going on with all this AI stuff?
So I look at it like this. Now, I'm not a stubborn person, but I need a lot of information. If anybody wants to hire me, let's say, for instance, right? No AI can hire me. I can tell you that right now. The people that I have hired in the last few years, I can tell you right now, nobody would have come through AI. They needed multiple conversations. I hired the head of legal at my last company. I'm telling you, it took at least 6 or 7 conversations just to get them interested in the job. You know, it's not easy, you know, and these are in-person conversations. You have to, AI is great for managing stuff. For if I want to generate content, it's great. If I want to respond to an email and I'm like, oh man, I really need a good response. And I'll use AI for that. Okay. Mm-hmm. But human contact, you cannot replace. I wrote an article a long time ago that the big job boards are going to go away and the small ones are going to evolve. And that's exactly what's happening. I remember in 2003, 4, 5, we used HotJobs. HotJobs was the job board to go to. Okay. We had Monster. Monster was massive. And Career Builder. I mean, I haven't been on Monster and Career Builder for years. They are around, but I don't use them. Everything is LinkedIn and Indeed. And these smaller job boards are coming up, which for life science is different. For supply chain is different. There's one about ranch jobs. Like, there's so many different niche, you know, job boards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I told you I have one that, you know, that I've been buying some names and I've seen so many job boards evolving. I saw pharmaceuticaljobs.com come up for sale. So.
Which is amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. We were talking about that. You know, I'm with you. I think that there is a ton of leverage from AI. I think it's making people's jobs easier. I think it's scaring people who aren't of the mindset that I've got to figure this out. And it's coming for all of us one way or the other in the sense that it's going to be utilized. And I think the people that are going to be okay are the ones who accept that and figure out how to adapt and leverage what they can. But the idea of humans being replaced in the most human job there is, which is putting people together, there's no way.
No. See, there are two kinds of, like, you know, recruiters are in the future. Okay. Those who use AI and those who don't have jobs.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to use AI in some way, shape, or form. Even LinkedIn has aspect of AI now. Okay.
Yeah.
You can generate a message using AI. I wouldn't do that, but I'm sure other people would, because your messages have to be customized for it to be effective. And I checked with LinkedIn. the rate of your in-mail, you know, acceptance rate is the same if it's customized or if it's like, you know, generated through AI. It's the same acceptance rate. So, use whatever works for you.
Okay? Wow, that's amazing.
And in my opinion, you should change everything that you do. If something is working, see if you can make it better. Don't stick to the same thing because then you get used to the same old method. Oh, I've always done it like this. No, you should change something every week. Do something new. That's my motto. Do something new every week. I have always encouraged my team. Try something new. Don't be afraid to fail. You never know what's going to work.
100%.
And if it works, share it with us. You know?
Yep. Big time. The last thing I want to touch on with you is you're the director of talent acquisition. Mm-hmm. You, I think at Getinga, you were senior manager before you left, correct?
Yeah.
So you've obviously risen up in the ranks through different companies and mm-hmm. taken on, you know, different levels of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
There's a variety of folks out there who are great recruiters internally, but they want to manage a team. What advice do you have for them as to figure out how to get on that path?
So a lot of people have asked me that, that question from my team over here and also getting it. You got to act like a manager before you become one. You got to act like one. Just because you don't have the title, it doesn't mean you cannot take the responsibility. So if somebody, like at my last company, there was somebody who wanted to work on the university side. If you want to be a lead, act like one. Act like one, you're going to become one. So take on more work, take on, because everybody wants people who are like, you know, going to take charge. I just want to see who steps up. Somebody says, hey, I need help over here. Who's stepping up to help? Who's taking charge of organizing something? Who's taking charge of, you know, putting stuff together? Ultimately, a leader is a leader, Mitch. They're going to show up. Anybody who takes charge, somebody who speaks with a certain level of confidence, somebody who takes on more work than, I don't want to hear the words, it's not my job, I'm not getting paid enough for this. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what your title is or what your pay is. All it matters is what you bring to the table, because ultimately your title and income will catch up to the work that you actually do. You don't need the title to be a leader. I've heard that since I was a kid. You don't need a title to be a leader.
It's great advice. Did you know that you wanted to be a leader, especially when you transitioned around to the corporate side?
I honestly did not. Initially I just wanted to play around. I wanted to like, you know, do my job. I enjoyed recruiting so much that I started having fun, and then I was doing some things, and then other people said, hey, can you show us how you're doing this? And then I started to teach other people, and then the mentorship grew. I had people in 5 countries. They were reaching out. I found myself working at 5 a.m., 10 a.m. Somebody called me at, you know, 11 p.m. But I just started enjoying sharing stuff more than anything else. I was like, yeah, I can teach this. So, and then my last boss said, well, whether you like it or not, you're in a position that people are like, you know, listening to you. So, you know, I read it in a book. If you think you're a leader, but there's nobody following, then you're just taking a walk.
That's pretty good.
And then again, I've been blessed with some great leaders around me who really guided me well. And they gave me some great books to read. I was not really a fan of the books until you get a book like What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. I mean, that really changed everything, the way I function in the morning, you know. I mean, that is an exercise. Yeah, that book really changed the way I function. You know?
I'm excited to read it because I think that the way you speak to yourself is probably the most important person that you speak to, and you can make or break, you know, really the criticality of your mentality.
So, Mitch, let me ask you something in a slightly different way. Are you a fan of Star Wars?
I would say I'm not a crazy fan, but I enjoy the movie series. Absolutely.
So I was a huge fan of Darth Vader only because of the voice. And the more I got to know James Earl Jones, the more I became a fan. You know, he had a big stutter. He couldn't talk, James Earl Jones. He couldn't talk.
I did not know that.
So when I got my first job as a recruiter, 2004, I think I was at an agency. I had a bad stutter. I couldn't talk. So my first call to a candidate was a disaster because I couldn't even talk.
Wow.
Then somebody said, you need to read this book. Which one? What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. Go home. So I went in the mirror and I just started to repeat. And well, that was about 20 years ago.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It had that big of an impact on you, obviously.
You have no idea. You have no idea.
Well, I'm really excited to read it.
That's why when anybody on the team, anybody at the company, anybody I need to say, I'm frustrated, I'm having a tough time, you haven't read the right books.
Yeah. And I would take it again a step further and say, not only reading, but you got to implement.
Oh,
you got to implement.
Because
I've found myself many times I've read it and I've thought I've consumed the content and then realized, yeah, wait, what did I read? Because if you don't implement it, you lose it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I've read How to Win Friends and, like, you know, Influence People, but honestly, I didn't really get that one. I'd rather stick to, you know.
What's when you talk to yourself?
What to say when you talk to yourself. That's one of my favorite books. That's the book I can live by for the rest of my life. But, you know, I can talk about that all day, but that's a whole different topic altogether. But in short, it's a tough market. I see a lot of people going through a lot of challenges. And in my own family, I've seen somebody who's just been applying for jobs and has had like 17 interviews so far. And he's a little disheartened. I was like, look, you have to keep it up. You have to go to every interview thinking this is it. You know what? You know, you have to go from a loss to loss without the loss of enthusiasm. Because if you show up at your next interview with with a frown, with a weight, it'll show up in the interview. You got to show up happy. You got to show up lightweight. You got to show up like, hey, I'm ready. I'm your person, you know.
100%.
You got to show up with that happy heart and a smile on your face and with the right question. Somebody actually called me yesterday and said, I got my first job interview. How do I prepare? I said, have great questions. Look at the job details and get your questions ready. If they say, do you have any questions? The worst thing you can do is say, no, not right now. You have to ask good questions because people will remember what you ask. When speaking with the hiring managers in the debrief after the interview, they always say, they had great questions. Having great questions is, I think, the most important thing. And if you don't know what questions to ask, hey, use ChatGPT for that.
Thank you for saying that. And here's the other thing. I've seen candidates in the past get, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, in essence, passed over. They lost the opportunity because of that feedback. However, the candidate's response was, well, I got my questions answered in the previous interview. Yeah, but the person that you were interviewing one-to-one didn't know that you asked those questions. So even if you need to ask the same questions, one, please do. And two, you're going to get a different response anyways because it's somebody else's vantage point. So please don't not ask the questions because you think you got them answered from somebody else because that person doesn't know.
Ask every time. And if you're speaking with somebody from HR, please ask, you know, questions about collaboration, cross-functional collaboration. How is the unity in the company, team, this, that? Ask the right questions. You know, be real. Don't be like, I mean, you're talking to somebody that could be your potential employer, somebody that could be your colleague for years to come. Again, you have to walk in there with that mindset. You know, don't be timid. You have to be yourself. That's what my line is with everybody. You got to be yourself. You cannot be anybody else, but have the right questions. That is completely in your hands.
Noor, you're the real guy. You're the real deal. And I appreciate you being here. If it's cool with you, one of the things we'll do in the show notes is put a link to your LinkedIn profile and a link to Hearing Life.
Sure.
And encourage anybody who's interested to reach out directly. But I really appreciate you being here and just kind of calling it as it is and giving as much value as you can and as you did today.
Absolutely. Can I just have one more advice for the people? Just one tip.
100%, please.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if anybody's a fan of, you know, Breaking Bad. I am a huge fan of Breaking Bad.
One of the best series ever.
Best, right? So I don't watch a lot of, you know, TV, but I did catch a clip of Bryan Cranston's interview. He said, my job is to audition and walk away. That's exactly how I look at a job interview. Your job is to show up and audition and walk away. Whether you get the job or the role is not in your hands. What is in your hands is your audition. Be on time, be prepared, do your interview and walk away. If you get the job, great. If you don't, it's okay. You have to treat it as an audition. Don't take it personally. That's all. And you have to be ready every time. And you have to walk in there with the same happiness and enthusiasm as it's your first one. That's
love it.
The only thing I can say.
I appreciate it, man. Well, congrats to you and what you've done career-wise yourself. I know that you've impacted a lot of other lives as far as folks who have worked on your team and others that you've mentored. And I appreciate you being here and sharing your insight.
Thank you so much, Mitch. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.